For the second year in a row, Reporters Without Borders named Pakistan the most dangerous country for journalists. 11 reporters killed last year, among them veteran journalist Mukarram Khan Atif, killed while he prayed at a mosque. He worked for the Voice of America, and the Pakistan Taliban said they told him to stop his propaganda against the Taliban in the foreign media. Our next guest, Lawrence Pintek, is advising journalism programs in 4 universities in Pakistan's dangerous tribal regions. One professor said to him, "We need to include conflict safety training in our curriculum." But Pintek says despite that danger, journalism is flourishing. Lawrence Pintek is dean of the Edward R. Murrow College of Communication at Washington State University, a frequent guest, and he joins us from the studios of Northwest Public Radio. Lawrence, in a recent piece in the Chronicle of Higher Education, you write that students at these schools brave roadside bombs and Taliban threats, professors kidnapped and killed. Why are they signing up for journalism?
They want to have a voice. One of them said something very interesting. He said, in the past, the jirgas, the tribal gatherings where they expressed their opinions and they had an impact on decision-making, those are kind of going away. And they're saying that journalism is another way for them to impact on their communities and the country. One of the things that happens on these campuses is they've been given radio stations in part through USAID, and these radio stations are both training student journalists, but they're also acting as a force to counter what's been called mullah radio, the religious mullahs broadcasting from across the border in Afghanistan.
Do I remember that one of those radio stations was actually blown up?
Various of them have been attacked. These schools are on various levels under siege. And the things that these faculty encounter and have to deal with on a day-to-day basis is beyond the ken for us. They had a student who came to them and said, "Look, I can't take my final exams. I need a waiver because my brother was killed in a suicide bombing." And they were very sympathetic until they found out that the brother was the suicide bomber.
That shows what these professors are facing. So it raises the question, are they sure who they're training journalists for?
What they are doing is they are giving young men and women, and primarily men, the skills of journalism, and they are trying to inculcate the ethics and legacy of journalism. At the end of the day, those ethics, that legacy, really is 180-degree counter to what the Taliban and the other militants are trying to do through their communications media.
How big is the gulf, the divide between journalism in the city and in the tribal areas?
There's a big gulf, certainly in terms of equipment and in-depth training, but there is not a gulf in terms of the access to news or even the ability of women to operate. There are women journalism students at these schools. Where the difference comes is that the male students may go off to do an internship at a major news organization, and in many cases, the families don't want the women to leave. So the women will work on that campus radio station or that campus newspaper.
Well, but we can still see some of the divide because we understand there was a radio station out in the tribal areas, and in 2009, it was shut down after it accepted on-air calls from female listeners calling in. People in the town really wanted it back, and that's the good news. They had gotten accustomed to having their radio station, and a compromise with the elders in the village was worked out so that the radio station could come back. Women were not allowed to call in. There's a gulf.
And the other issue is that just because you're in a city doesn't mean you're safe as a journalist. Many of the journalists who've been killed in Pakistan or have been harassed and beaten and attacked are in the cities. A good friend of mine was the editor of the Frontier Post in Peshawar. He had to flee the country a number of years ago. Militants came after him charging blasphemy because he published a letter to the editor they didn't like.
And you had the chance to bring, I think it was 8 journalism professors from these tribal areas out to your school. I can't imagine. I know that when you went to Pakistan, you showed a professor there your iPad. You were casually looking at something on the iPad. And I want you to tell us his reaction to that. And then, to top it off, they come to, you know, the Edward R. Murrow College of Communication at Washington State.
I pulled out my iPad because we were talking about where his school was located, plugged in his town, and Zoom, it goes into his town, and his jaw dropped. He said, "I've never seen such a thing." So the contrast is just staggering. They have students who are cutting up old newspapers and magazines to paste together a newspaper. They're teaching online journalism without computers or without online. They came here specifically to look at how we use radio within our curriculum. But then they saw what else we did. They couldn't suck up enough information. There weren't enough hours in the day for them.
How are you going to keep them down on the farm, so to speak, Lawrence? And I mean, I guess by that I mean not just the Taliban looking to suppress any journalism in these tribal areas in Pakistan. How does the government feel about it?
Pakistani journalism is incredibly vibrant. There are scores of radio and television stations. There are scores of newspapers. Every political viewpoint is reflected in the Pakistani media. The government struggles with this because it has media that are pro-civilian government, media that are pro-military end of the government, media that are pro-militants. So every political flavor, as it were, is out there.
You note that military intelligence visits these journalism schools out in Pakistani tribal areas. And we're reading another reporter, Hasnain Kazim, saying that this is one of the biggest dangers to journalists, intelligence services. How so? What is the military looking to find, and why would that be dangerous to journalists?
Well, it depends on what you report. There are red lines all over, and the military is the biggest red line. A quick primer in Pakistani politics, there is a huge divide between the civilian leadership and the military leadership. And then that drills down through the society. And the ISI, the intelligence arm of the military, has long been accused of fostering some of these militant groups. So there's this complete mix that's going on, and journalists are caught in the middle. So journalists are as likely to be threatened by or killed by militants of the Pakistani Taliban as they are by the intelligence arm of the Pakistani military.
Given that, Lawrence Pintak, you longtime reporter yourself before this position at Washington State, what's your sense of your feelings about these people working so hard to teach journalism?
We sit here at a state university struggling with the state budget cuts, and when they come walking in and talking about what they're facing, it just puts everything in context. They are literally putting their lives on the line for journalism education, and that's a very inspiring thing.
Lawrence Pintak, Dean of the Edward R. Murrow College of Communication at Washington State University. His book is The New Arab Journalist, Mission and Identity in a Time of Turmoil. And we've been hearing how that mission and identity plays out not in the Arab world, but in Pakistan. Lawrence, thank you.
Thank you, Robin.